Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. When we think about the Lenten season and the approach of Easter, it often takes us back to thoughts of what life was like for the people who lived in the first century. What kind of freedoms did they have? Were those who followed the Messiah Yeshua in danger for proclaiming their faith? Was there discord between family members who found a new faith in Jesus Christ and those who maintained their loyalty to the Orthodox beliefs? My guest today, Linda Ferguson, is a gifted storyteller, speaker, and dancer. She is the author of A Royal Dance, the first book in her The Lion and the Butterfly series, which takes readers on an unforgettable journey into the life of a troubled young Jewish girl in first century Jerusalem. In this first book, readers will discover the sword that Jesus warned would divide family members and the chrysalis of hope for a new beginning through faith in Yeshua. Linda has ministered in Israel and experienced a divine visitation at Shiloh, danced in Jerusalem, and has walked on the shores of Galilee. Her passion is to see God's children fulfill their destiny. Linda lives with her husband and three adopted boys in Dodge City, Kansas. She is available to speak at church events and offers a variety of topics, which are found on her website. Good morning and welcome to the show, Linda.
Good morning, Patty.
It's such a pleasure to have you here. It's been a while since you and I met each other back there at the Colorado Christian Writers Conference.
Yes, with 40 inches of snow.
Yes. Oh, man, you know what? I was just in my glory then. Oh, my goodness, I love snow. I just thought it was awesome. In fact, as you know, I was on faculty up there. And that morning, I started to walk out the door with my roommates, and here Marlene comes up in a van with a driver, and she says, "Oh, Patty needs a ride." And I said, "No, I don't." She goes, "Get in the van." She's like, "I don't want you having a broken leg when you're on my faculty." So I got to walk around with her some later, though, when she wasn't around, so... But yeah, I'm a nut for snow. Well, the Olympics are on now, the Winter Olympics. And yeah. I just love watching them. And my dad grew up in the town right next to where Lake Placid is in New York, where the 1932 and 1980 Olympics were held.
Yes,
so we spent
I remember.
A lot of vacation time up there. And I've actually been to the top of that 90-meter ski jump that they had, that they have over there. I just thought how awesome that would be to ski jump off of that thing. I could barely ski, let alone ski jump, but hey, I could dream.
That's right. We can all dream.
I'm having a blast watching the Olympics. I just can't keep up with them because they're on so long, you know, for such long periods of time. So I have all kinds of them recorded. It's always fun. Well, Linda, like I explained to our audience today, you have a wonderful book out. But before we get into talking about your book and your series, I usually like to ask my guests what childhood experiences contributed to the writer, the speaker, the person that you are today. What kind of a home did you grow up in?
Well, it was a good home, except when I was about 5 years old, my mom would go down and visit the neighbor lady, and we would, while we were there, the neighborhood boy, which was older, he decided to kind of thought he should experiment with my body, but it was difficult. It was painful, difficult time. I hid it from my mom. She finally found the blood on my panties one day. And then a couple years after that, my parents divorced. And during that time, there's about 3 years after that where we were back and forth between my father and living with alone and living with my what was going to be my stepfather. And finally we settled down and we settled down together with my stepfather. During that time, I had a recurring dream over and over again as a child. I dreamed I was in this little ball of yarn and gum and darkness and junk, and I was clawing my way, trying to get out of it. And what had happened, I realized later, is I shut myself into this place, and I didn't want to deal with the pain. So what happened as a result of all of that has taken me on a journey. The healing process has helped me now to have an understanding better of others that have gone through the same kind of painful situations. And so in many ways, it has changed my life totally. In a good way, I have to say, because what I know now is that God makes all things beautiful, no matter what we've been through.
Yes, he does.
He takes it and makes something beautiful out of it. So there were happy times in between, but this was just a little part of my life that got locked away. It caused me to hate myself and not think I could do anything right and wanted to please. So I don't want to make it sound like my childhood was terrible, because we had a lot of fun times, too. We had three brothers.
But still, it was a very tough time. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which is why you can write through that pain, Linda.
Yeah.
Because I definitely saw that come out in your book, and we'll talk about that in a little while. But first, I understand that you had an opportunity to do ministry in Israel, and I cannot imagine how wonderful it must be to actually have been in the Holy Land. Can you share with us a little bit about what it was like to minister there, your most inspiring experience there? Give us a little overview of what it was like to be there.
It's interesting because it was interesting. It's funny because a lot of people would say to me, oh, I'd love to go to Israel. And I never had that desire. And it was kind of funny because I thought, why would I need to go there? I have Jesus in me. We walk together all the time. And I never had that pull. But years ago, the Lord had spoken to me one day, I'm going to take you to the nations. And so when this opportunity came to go to Israel, He said, I want you to start in Jerusalem. We're going to start there. And then out, you know, from there, I'll take you to other nations, which last October he took me to Russia. So, yeah, that was another whole story. But anyway, so I went to Israel and not really all that excited, but just doing what God told me to do. And, kind of excited. I don't mean I wasn't, but it was amazing. The Sea of Galilee, all those places that we went were just, we encountered many things. But the most important one that, you know, transformed me in many ways and changed my message was in Shiloh. And the night before we went to Shiloh, we were in Jerusalem in the hotel there that night. I was getting ready to go to supper, and the lady, my roommate, I stood up, and I just felt real, whoa, dizzy-like, whatever you want to call it. I don't even know how to explain it. But it was the presence of God, but I didn't know it. And she says, honey, that's the Holy Spirit. You need to sit down and see what God wants to say. I said,
oh my.
Okay. So I sat down, and in the presence of God, and waited for him to speak. And he just said, I've walked with you in Galilee. I've walked with you in Nazareth. I've walked with you at the Dead Sea. I am walking with you. And I'm thinking, you're walking with me where? He didn't finish the sentence. You know, I'm sitting there waiting. But he basically just saying, I am walking with you. So it was pretty fun. But when I stood up to go to dinner, then I was absolutely full of God and His love. And I was just bubbling all over the place. And we went next door after dinner to IHOP, which was International House of Prayer they have in Jerusalem. And I mean, I just was so in love with Jesus. And I just, when the worship came on, I was just dancing like David danced, in love with Him.
Oh,
well, that was the first of the encounter then that led to the next encounter in Shiloh the next morning. So, do you want me to tell you about that?
Absolutely.
What happened the next day?
First, will you clarify something for us first, Linda? When you went over to Israel, did you go as a part of a ministry team, or was this a tourist?
No, I went as,
you know, excursion.
I went as part of a ministry team, and we were doing kind of prayer warfare stuff in different places.
Okay.
And everywhere we went, we were encountering different things and releasing the word of God into the atmosphere, speaking the word into the atmosphere, worshiping at different sites that we went, and decreeing Jesus is the Messiah, that type of thing. But no, I did go with a ministry team, as a part of a ministry team, prepared ahead of time by them. And so, yes.
Okay, so tell us what happened at Shiloh.
We drove in an armored truck, bus, to Shiloh because they covered our windows because it was dangerous for sniping.
Wow.
And all the way to Shiloh. And honestly, I did not know anything about Shiloh, really. And, but I sure didn't know what God was going to do. But as we walked out of the hotel room that day, I thought, you know, I told my roommate, I need to take that scepter with me. I had brought a scepter with me to Israel. When God said, take it with me, I said, okay. It was about 3 feet long. I bought it in a conference. It was what they called a bridal scepter. And it had decorations and stuff on it. A lot of it had to do with the Old Testament rituals and things too. I won't get into all that. And I had used it in my own property we have 80 acres of mine in our home. And I had one day, because there was a slight chance that they were going to take our land for the casino in our city. And it says, well, that's not going to happen. And my son Joshua and I went out with another friend of mine, and we marched all the boundaries of the 80 acres with this scepter and ended up in the middle of the pasture, put it on a post. And then we met with the Lord 7 days there with him, read Song of Solomon, etc. Well, anyway, we ended up not having to give our land to the casino. Well, anyway, I took that with me, and that day God said, take it with you to Shiloh. So I took it with me, and when I was there in Shiloh, we saw the orphanage with all these children that were Jewish children that were orphans, that parents had been killed by the snipers and terrorists. Mm. And they were so sweet. And they were memorizing the Torah, the first 5 books. They were memorizing, and they were so proud of themselves. They would quote it to us. And we had brought clothing for them and some different things. And then we went down to the site of the old tabernacle, which is right close to where they were. But before we went down to that site, he took us in. This Jewish man was not a Christian, took us into the synagogue and did the reading of the day, and he said, this scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes. And I thought, well, that's weird. I'm holding a scepter, but I don't see how that has anything to do with what he said. But I thought it's kind of unusual. I thought, So we leave there and go down to the dig where they had all these, you know, we found some relics, not relics, but little pieces of some of the old tabernacle on the ground and stuff.
Wow.
We went down there, and I got my prayer shawl up over my head then and put it over my head, had the scepter, had my Bible open. Oh, I forgot about this part. We sat down before we went down there into this room where they showed us a video. And in the video, they talked about Samuel and they talked about Hannah. And they hold Hannah in very high regard there. They call her a prophetess in the video they were talking about. She was a prophetess. And she had birthed the prophet and two, et cetera, you know, and everything. Well, while we're watching the video, I had nothing on my head at that point. I'm just sitting there with a scepter in my hand. God put something over my head. Somebody, angel, someone, draped
wow.
something. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see it, but I felt it over my head, over my shoulders. And mm-hmm. I'd looked kind of sideways, thought, what is this? And so put that over my head and over my shoulders, and it was, you know, wasn't something I could see, but I could feel.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
while we were watching the video, the Lord spoke to me and said, you're a modern-day Hannah.
Oh, my.
And I thought, well, they're saying she's a prophetess. I'm thinking, what in the world is this about? So when we left there, that's when I grabbed my prayer shawl and put it up over my head. I thought, maybe I need to put something over my head. Although God had me covered. I think he had me covered. So when I carried this scepter in my hands and this prayer shawl over my head all the way down the hill, I was walking down. We had to walk a ways down. I was weeping and crying so hard. I could not stop. It was sobbing out loud type of crying. And the Holy Spirit had just come on me, and I didn't even know what I was crying about. And it had something to do with all of that was happening with Hannah and Samuel and the scepter. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, I had adopted a son and named him Samuel, so that could have been some of it. But I think, I know now it was way more than that. So we go down to the bottom with this Jewish man that was leading the way, and some of the team that I was with were repenting to him for the things that had happened to him. And the Israel people, some that had German heritage, repented, and different ones were repenting, and they had put this huppah thing up over him and were just repenting and asking forgiveness and all this. Well, I was just sitting there bawling and crying. And I had my Bible at that point open to Samuel in the prayer of Hannah. By that point, I had opened it up. Finally, I asked my leader if I could go and give him my scepter. I felt that's what God wanted me to do. I didn't know what all that meant. I still don't understand this. I just tell you this is what happened, and I know what happened to me inside.
Okay.
So she said, okay. So I went to him. I gave him the scepter. I said, will you take it? He said, yes. And then I read that prayer, and then I cried out loud, real loud, three times, sons of Jacob, come forth, sons of Jacob, come forth. Sons of Jacob, come forth. And he stopped me. I felt really stupid and foolish, to be honest. And he stopped me, and he said, as I turned to walk away, he stopped me. He says, wait. He said, just today, I was called upon to read Hannah's prayer in synagogue. And he was trying to let me know, there's something you're doing here that is powerful, and I don't understand it. And neither did I.
Neither did you, sure.
No. So when I walked away from there, he guarded me and stood behind me. I was on my face in the mud. It started to rain, and I was worshiping. We were worshiping. And from that point on, we developed a bond and talked and shared. But what happened in my heart was the fact that God has a destiny and a purpose for everybody. And how to explain the transformation that took place in me. That's set me on a new path. And at that point, I hadn't written my book. But he was laying the foundation.
Well, it sounds very, very powerful. Linda, I can't even imagine having an experience like that and how it would impact a person's life forever.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness.
Well,
thank you for sharing with us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you also mentioned, I'm sorry, did you want to go on? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. You had mentioned a Night with the King meetings in your home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And where were you holding meetings, and what was going on? What was the purpose of the meetings, and what happened? Because it sounded like you were kind of excited about that, too.
Yeah, I started those after I came back from Israel. Because the intimacy with the Lord was so strong there when you were in Israel. It transformed me a lot. And he'd already done so much in my life and bringing healing to me in my private times with him by learning intimacy with him and dancing. Actually, dancing with him, that's the only reason I was able to dance in Israel, as I danced with him privately in my own room during the healing process. And he and I danced many times together. It just became so natural. And I learned from all of that how much he didn't care what I did or didn't. It wasn't about what I did. It was who I was, you know. And I started recognizing how much, you know, he just liked being with me. He just liked being with me. And he liked to dance with me. We were, you know, intimate worship music would come on and we would sway together and I'd close my eyes and we just go around the room together and just a love relationship. And then I found later when I got brave enough to do that in public meetings at times when I knew it was acceptable by some people that many people would come up and say, oh, your dancing was such a blessing. And it was not the beauty of the dance. It was just the beauty of the love affair between me and him.
Mm-hmm.
So a Night with the King meetings was birthed out of all of that because I started getting people coming to me, young girls and many Hispanics. Our town has many Hispanics. So we did it in English and Spanish.
Oh,
and I had them once a month. Yes, we had an interpreter. And I'd have dinner. And they would come and I'd fix them a beautiful dinner. And then in the basement, I would have the room fixed with beautiful purple tablecloths and just, you know, little glass slipper things that had princess on them and everything. And so when we had our dinner and fellowship time, then we went down to fellowship with him. And it kind of was taken off of Song of Solomon, I mean Esther, the Book of Esther, where we would meet with them and I would encourage them to share their heart with him, that broken part that they've not told anybody about.
Mm-hmm.
And see what he might do. And out of those times together, he began to reveal to me when I'd be in front of the ladies a certain place of captivity that they were in. And I would just say, there's someone here, I feel God is saying to me, God, someone here that is captive place of unforgiveness or whatever it might be. And he wants to bring you out of that place tonight. And first time I did that, there was like three women, young teenage girls, just start to weep and weep and weep. And so then God would lead me through how to help them, you know, he wants to take your hand and he wants to take you up out of that place and that prison place and raise you up and see you with him in heavenly places. And, you know, I can't tell you everything, how it all happened. But then it was an intimate time to learn to be loved by the King for who you were, not for what you do or don't do. You know, he was able to break through some of the shells that they had around them, the pain. And so it was really, really a beautiful, beautiful time. And I loved every minute of it when I was doing it.
Because
it was time for me to be with him during that time, too.
It sounds amazing, and what a blessing that God chose you to lead these people out of that pain, because we all have some degree of pain somewhere in our hearts.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget one time. I worked in psychiatric nursing for many years, and we had a doctor. I worked for the VA hospital, and we had a doctor who, we had a patient who was demanding prescription pain meds, you know, kept demanding that he was in all this pain. He absolutely had to have all these pain meds, and she knew that he really didn't need them. And she told him, she said, we all live with some degree of physical or emotional pain every day of our lives. And I never forgot that line. It's like,
yeah,
how true that is,
very true.
You know? And how seldom we see it in other people, I think, is the sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be so focused on our own pain that we often don't see
yeah.
others. So for you to be able to bring that out in these people is absolutely wonderful, Linda, and I want to commend you for that. I think that just sounds like a very rewarding experience for you, and
yeah.
I'm sure it was for everyone who was involved. Well, Linda, we're about halfway through our show, and at this point, I like to take what I call a little break, kind of a station identification thing, if you will, because we have people on Blog Talk right now that come in the middle of a show, and they don't know who they're listening to or what we're talking about. So I'll just recap a little bit. You are listening to Step Into the Light here on Blog Talk Radio, and I am your host, Patty Sheen. And I have a wonderful, engaging author on the show today. Her name is Linda Ferguson. She has one book out. The second one is on the way in May. The name of the first book is A Royal Dance. It is the first book in the Lion and the Butterfly series. And we're talking, first of all, we've been talking about some of the experiences she has had in her life that probably led up to the writing of that book, I imagine, Linda.
Yes, it did.
Right. But I do want to make listeners aware that if you did come in the middle of the show and you'd like to hear it all, or you'd like to hear it again, or you would like to refer the show to friends or relatives, that it is on archive. And it can be found on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene, all one word, .com. And there you will find the Blog Talk Radio tab, and you will find actually a link to all of our shows there that have been aired to date. So we invite you to listen again or to refer other folks to the show. Also, on that website of mine, you will find links to Linda's website, her Facebook page, her Twitter page. She's kind of a new tweeter, so she's taking a little bit of time to get into the social media stuff, and I understand that because I still flounder quite a bit with it. Anyway, if you would like to make connections with Linda or learn a little bit more about her, her website link will be on that PattySheen.com page. It's just go to the Blog Talk Radio tab and then the show, her show, and there's a little tab there that says more information, I believe it says. That'll take you to further information about where to find Linda. So, well, Linda, you have shared some experiences with us that, as I say, probably did lead to your going ahead and writing A Royal Dance. Did you have an interest in writing prior to that, or was this something else that you just felt the Lord had led you to do?
Well, my writing journey is another whole story. part of what had happened to me out of the situations that had happened in my life caused me to think I couldn't do anything of any value. And so way back in like in the 70s, I had a friend say, you should write a book about your life. And I said, not a chance. So she said, pray about it. I said, okay. So I laid three things out before the Lord. One was I needed, and this tells you how far back it was, I needed a typewriter. I needed my husband's support, and I needed a desire to do it. And at Christmas, my husband gave me a typewriter without knowing about the prayer. And I found a writer's course online. Marlene Bagnell had a online thing. Well, anyway, I enrolled. And out of that time together, I got a few devotions, published a few articles in women's magazines. But I still didn't believe what I did was good enough. And I walked away.
Mm-hmm.
My God was calling me to be a writer. He saw me something that I was not in my own eyes. And it took me a long journey to get to where this book was actually written. I would sit down and try to write. One time I had written three chapters, not this particular book, but it was my story in a personal experience way. And a lady was going to help me with it in North Carolina, was willing to. And the day before, week before I'm supposed to go to her, workshop, she died.
Oh, my goodness.
It was devastating to me. I thought, well, you know, every time I'd see, think I'd seen some kind of breakthrough, something would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was another time where I wanted to, I was at a writer's conference, and I went only because God said to go. I didn't want to go. And there we had to write. I had an assignment to bring back in, and I was so scared the night before to read mine in class. If I could have driven down that windy, dark mountain, that was more scary, I'd have left, but it was too scary to ride down that mountain for Mrs. Park. So I stayed, and I read it to the class. I was the first one, but I had stomach ache and everything else to write my assignment that day. I was just petrified. But I finally raised my hand. I said, who wants to go first? I raised, I will. He said,
oh,
good for you.
You.
He knew how I felt. And when I read it, he clapped, and he goes, you are a writer. And I thought, all the way down the mountain home, I am a writer, I told myself. So I was going to start writing my book when I got back. And I lasted about 2 months and walked away again. And there's just many other things that caught in the, you know, kept. But God didn't give up on me. And that to me is a testimony of how when God sees something in somebody, he never gives up on them. I mean, he never gave up on me. No matter how many times I walked away, he had a way of pulling me back. And so finally I had a business. I had a business, a curves for exercise business. He said, shut it. I shut it down. Then I had this other ministry to help people with substance abuse. I just started it, and I was going out there every day between 1 and 5 to worship and be with him. And he gave me this beautiful vision of a butterfly, and me and him in a meadow. And he just kept wooing me. He called me my little butterfly.
Oh.
And his little butterfly. He said, his little butterfly. So anyway, then he said, shut the ministry down. Go home, write your book. So I said, okay. And I wrote this book originally as a parable, and I put it in Jerusalem because I started it. I probably have other questions, but I'm getting rambling off here on stuff.
You're fine.
I wrote it and I put it in Jerusalem because I was born on May 14th, which was the day that Israel became a nation miraculously. And when I was born, I should have died. They didn't expect me to live. They just thought they would save the mother. And so it was a real miracle that I did live. She was actually in the delivery process for over 8 hours. And they just tried to push me out. Every time she had a contraction back in those days, they didn't do things the way they do now.
No. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was a miracle. And Israel becoming a nation was a miracle. It was on May 14th. I was born on Mother's Day on May 14th. So I chose to start the story in Pentecost. Anyway, I don't even know what your question was. I think I got sidetracked. So you can redirect me.
Well, we were talking about what motivated you to write a royal dance. And then I asked
a book.
Along with that, I said, had you been a writer prior to starting the royal dance?
There we go. Well, all of that to lead you to that. I wrote this as a parable, and then I just want to get it done and obey God, you know? Just do it and get it done and obey God. So I did.
God
I wrote
said,
it as
this,
a parable.
I better get
then
on. I say, God said, do this. I better get on it.
I better. And I thought, I just want to get it done and be done with it. He won't have to tell me this anymore. Well, once I got it done, I send it to the editor. The editor says, I think this is a novel. And I said, I don't know how to write a novel. She says, well, let me help you. So for 9 months, she took me under her wing week after week. And I send her a chapter and she sent it back. You need to add this. Da, da, da. So anyway, then when we get done, we get so far into it. She says, you know, we're going to have to end this. This is going to be more than one book. So my one parable turned into at least 3 novels.
Because you've got one coming out soon, and I'm sure that you'll have a couple more to follow that. Very good. Well, that is so cool. That is so cool. Well, share with us, and you kind of did already in a way, Linda, why the butterfly was extremely significant in the royal dance.
Yes, it is. It's significant for the whole series. The line, of course, represents the line of Judah, which is Jesus. The butterfly is representative of a lot of things, but primarily it is the character Jerusha is representative of her and her journey to go into into the kingdom and understand the kingdom.
Yeah.
It represents so much. And when I had that kind of had that vision that day, I don't know how else to explain it, with the Lord, with him, like I was a little girl and he's throwing me out, catching me, and I was giggling, and then he called me my little butterfly and he turned to walk off. I said, "Don't leave." And he said, "I'm not. I'm always watching you."
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things that happened to me with the butterfly. Then years before that, I had a man at a writing retreat speak over me and tell me I'm sorry, I got interrupted. He told me, "Oh, you're like a butterfly. You don't look like you know where you're going, but you always get where God wants you to go."
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of, yeah. So I didn't pay much attention to that until years later, things started falling together. I realized that I kind of was that way. Littered around, don't think like I am. But I, like with the writing of this book, I eventually got where God wanted me to go.
Oh, yeah.
But Jerusha, the main character, is the same way. She sees the butterfly. It represents kind of freedom to her, but it also represents where she's going. And she's going to get where God wants her to go. And he's watching. He's looking after her. And it's a real contrast between the lion, the mighty lion, the tender, delicate butterfly. So kind of what the butterfly means. It means much more, but I don't want to give the story away.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's been quite some time since I read the book, but I just fell in love with Jerusha. I love the name you gave to her and the character that she was. And of course, part of the premise of the book, too, like I alluded to in the introduction, is that she is kind of caught up between her mother's orthodox belief and her father following the Messiah, Yeshua. And, you know, she's kind of not quite sure what to believe or who to believe or what.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go into this a whole lot either because I don't want to give away the book, but she has a lot of mixed feelings about her father throughout the book. And
she does.
I don't know.
She loved her daddy.
Absolutely.
She loved her Abba, but she didn't understand why he didn't come for her. And she is angry.
Yeah. And you know what I thought about, and you know, maybe this never even entered your head. I was reading the book, Linda, that dichotomy kind of crossed my mind as far as our relationship with God. How often, you know, we're just so in love with him, but boy, when he doesn't do quite what we think he should, you know,
he doesn't show up when
we
think he should.
We get very frustrated and we feel sad. And so I kind of wondered if that's what you had in mind or if that was just something that I gleaned out of the story.
No, you're right on, because I wrote this whole thing as a parable. So there was a teaching behind the story, you know.
Yeah.
But, of course, also, this first book, everything in there actually happened to me. So it is my story as well. But Timon, her betrothed, I don't want to give the story away too much there either, is representative a lot of Christ and his love and his gentleness. And she's in her learning to trust him and whether she's going to trust him, whether she's going to trust any man for that matter.
Well, sure, after
ever
the
again.
Experiences that she's had, absolutely.
Well, also the Lord told me to write my story and I didn't want to do it. And I ran away for like 35 or more years. So I had to write about me.
and how interesting that it manifested itself in a novel.
Yeah, I didn't intend it to be that way at all. So that's another dichotomy that God ended up putting it in fiction form. But, and then book two is also, another part of the story. It continues. The saga continues.
Well, good. I'm going to have to get book two because I really enjoyed the first book. So. And that comes out in May, is that right?
What now? I'm sorry.
On your website, I think you said that comes out in May of 2018.
Comes out in May, A Royal Family. Yeah, it's A Royal Family. And it's also about the times of how difficult it was during that time of Jew-Gentile relationships and even you know, within the same family. And again, I don't want to give the story away, but Jerusha, you know, struggles through feeling cursed because she's barren. She's, you know, and those days in particular, it was for the Jewish woman, that was a sign of being cursed.
Yes.
So she felt she was not safe or anyone else around her was safe. And there were many conflicting things that enter into the story. Deborah, meaning one of the other characters that I developed in that second book, Jerusha just doesn't trust her. And she's a widow that has to come to live with them because of their taking care of the widows and the orphans. And so it gets complicated, but there's many other things involved. Roman soldiers and, should they be a part of the kingdom? And, you know, it's definitely an intriguing story, but I don't want to say too much and give the story away, but it's all about being a royal family.
Like I said, and I don't believe I said this on air. I think I said this to you before we went on air. Linda, I just have the highest respect for people who can write biblical fiction, because it must take a huge amount of research. Even though you were physically there in Israel and Jerusalem and all these places, still, it just has to.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. There is a tremendous amount of research involved. It did help to be there. It really helped to be there.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
With the feasts and all of the other things that go with their traditions and feasts and things like that. It just is, there's a lot to it, but even what they wear and how did they eat and did, you know, and it was an interesting thing, but journey, but good. I feel now I'm living in that time period. When you write a book like this, you live it, you know, and Jerusha was my character. It was who I was, but now putting her in that time frame has been quite interesting. And, so I have got to where I actually enjoy the writing process, which is the miracle of all miracles now for me, because I used to absolutely hate it. I couldn't stand to write. I'd go to conferences. Don't you just love writing? I said, no, I hate it. Well, why are you here? Only because God told me to go. But it at another writer's conference in another session where a man taught on writing with him. And that was the key for me. It opened up a whole.
Yes, Alan.
Alan Arnold.
Alan Arnold. Isn't he awesome?
Alan Arnold. That transformed my whole. It really did. I was in the process of that first book coming out, almost to come out, and I wept in his class. It was so healing for me, and to that whatever I do with him is good. When he creates, when God creates something, he says it is good. So when my book was coming out right after that, and I sat and wept and cried the day it was coming out, because it's not good enough, it's not good enough. I could tell you everything that's wrong with it, you know. It's not good enough. And my editor said, it is. You need to stop this, you know, and everything. And I just hung up the phone and cried and cried and cried and cried and cried. And very quietly, the Lord said to me, it is good. I heard the words in my mind. It is good. And then when I was listening on the radio right after that with a friend of mine, and I was telling her about all of this, and on the radio, just out of nowhere, came the song, the Butterfly Song by Julie True. And that is the song that I listened to over and over on repeat while I wrote the Butterfly Song. And and it comes on, and it's like God gave that little special touch again, told me it is good, and then he heard the Butterfly Song, and I wept, and I wept. I said, okay, God, if we do it together and you say it's good, then who am I to say it's not good? That freed me then when I started the second book to just more enjoy it, not be so worried about everything being so perfect, all the, you know.
Yeah.
Enjoy it, Linda. Just enjoy it with me. Do it. Just so it was so it became a time like it used to be, a wonderful intimate time to dance all over the room with Jesus. Now I could sit down and pick up the, you know, get off my computer and say, oh, Jesus, we're going to have fun today writing. I love to see what you're going to say today about Jerusha and what's going to happen in this chapter. And it became so freeing. I don't know how else to explain it. So, God, but it was a 35-year journey from the beginning to get to that point.
That's all right. You know,
now if somebody critiques it and says something.
I'm sorry?
Now if somebody critiques it and says something negative about it, I don't totally think, see, I told you I was a horrible writer and I was just should be doing this and I don't do that anymore. I just look at what they say. I can think about, well, you know, they could be right about that. Maybe the next time I say to my father, Father, we didn't do it that way. Maybe we can work on that. What do you think we should do about that, Father?
There
and
you
he
go.
Just says, he says, be anxious for nothing.
Yes. Oh, geez. That's one of
nothing.
My very favorite. Yeah, exactly.
So I don't stress then. I chill out and
you just
settle
chill
down.
Out. And just let it go. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Linda, I usually, like I say, this show is Step Into the Light, and our guests either talk about a dark time they've experienced or they talk about a way that they bring others out of darkness to light. And I think you've done a pretty good job of that already throughout the entire program, you know, sharing us with us your deepest pain and in childhood and how you kind of, you know, you came out of that darkness into a light that now shines for other people. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. And that's pretty much what the show is all about, how people start out and or they fall into a dark time and they not only deal with their pain, but they help others deal with their pain through having made their own journey out of darkness. So
I feel
I
that's what I've been
you.
A whole lifetime doing.
Yeah, exactly. But I have to laugh because we mentioned Marlene, and Marlene's name has probably been mentioned on these shows more than any other person. And I'll tell you why, because I would say at least 60% of my guests have come from my knowing Marlene, either from
she's
the writer's
so sweet. I love Marlene.
Oh, she a sweetheart. I've been to Colorado and to Philly, and you know, most of my guests come from those conferences, or they're people that she has referred to me in one way or another. So yeah, she has been a true blessing.
Yeah, she does. She was my first writing teacher years in, like, in the 70s, and we corresponded by the cassette tape. How long ago was.
Oh my goodness!
We would write. She'd send me assignments. I would do them, and she'd talk to me on a cassette tape, and then I would talk to her back on the cassette tape and mail it back to her. And
it's been
many years ago.
I guess. Yeah, I first met her, and I think I went to the first conference around the early 2000s. Well, Linda, it has been a pure delight having you on the show. I want to thank you so much. You just shared so much of your heart with us, and that is so appreciated. I'm sure that listeners are going to learn a lot from you, and they will be inspired, and they will come to realize that there is hope out there when you're in pain.
Well,
so
thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. Such an honor to be on. Thank you so much, Patty.
Well, to our listeners, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Let me remind listeners to please go to the website and check out Linda's information, check out her website, check out some of the other shows that we have broadcast, and God bless you, and thank you for listening. See you next time.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.